Welcome to How to Apply to College Like a Pro, or as we like to call it, how to make sure you truly show how awesome you are through your college applications. This podcast is created and sponsored by members of Occam Education, a private education and admissions consulting team with over a decade in creating personalized education plans, tutoring, and admissions consulting. This is episode 5, Tests and Courses. Oh my. So get ready, because we are about to discuss how to build a top-notch academic resume while handling all of those standardized tests. Your distinguished hosts today are yours truly, Dan Brown and David George.
Hello, everyone.
Dave, I'm still a little tired from discussing extracurricular activities and resumes in the last episode, so...
That's okay. I'm going to channel my inner workhorse.
You know, I once was driving to go skiing when I saw a donkey. I think the donkey was actually next to a horse, but I can't remember. Anyway, I have always liked animals, and I thought I would just pull over and pay homage to said donkey by petting his velvety nose.
And how did that turn out?
The donkey actually bit my index finger, and when I recoiled, it looked shocked. I think it bit it thinking, oh, this must be something to eat, because why would this idiot pull over on the side of the road and stick his finger near my mouth if he wasn't trying to feed me?
In that light, it does seem a bit disrespectful not to have brought him food.
That is true.
And why did you bring this up?
You said you were going to channel your inner workhorse, and I was thinking of other pack animals.
I do like the Rolling Stones.
I'm not following.
You said pack animals, and another term for a pack animal is Beast of Burden, which is a great song by the Rolling Stones.
Touché.
So while you sit there stunned, I will tell everyone what we are doing today. Today, I am going to, with maybe not that much help, it seems, describe how to approach the academic portion of the applications and the testing portion of them.
So just two things.
Huh. Yeah, two things. But they're big things, and there's a good amount of strategy and planning that go into both of them.
Okay, so where would you like to start?
Let's start with the academic portion. The first thing you need to know is that by far the most important element of your applications is your high school GPA. At many universities, so think large schools that maybe are not that selective, your high school GPA might get you in even if you participate in next to nothing and your test scores are mediocre. And we will talk later about what makes test scores great or mediocre, but the spoiler is that it depends on the university.
Okay, so high school GPA is super important.
Super important.
But you said you wanted to talk about the academic portion of the application. What exactly does that mean?
So the GPA is the most important part of your application, but it's also inextricably connected with the courses you take and any extracurricular academic courses you have pursued.
So really, it's GPA plus the courses themselves, plus any extra academic stuff you do outside of class.
That's right. And many people will already be familiar with this. A lot of high schools have honors tracks starting in the 9th grade. You can be in geometry, or you can be in geometry honors, English, or English honors. And then eventually, you can also be in advanced placement courses or IB courses, or even courses directly through a university for which you receive real college credit. And that description, honors, then AP, then IB, then credit-bearing university courses, basically describes the rising level of difficulty that universities recognize course-wise.
Okay, so taking harder courses is better if you can. What if you can't? We've long said that it's pretty unfair at certain high schools that you seem to get put on a track, let's say the regular English track as a 9th grader, and then it becomes pretty difficult and sometimes impossible to move up to the honors track. So what can you do if you are not already taking the most difficult courses?
That's a good question. And yes, we have certainly worked with students through the frustration of being locked into a particular track. I recall one school that had a math placement exam that would allow you to move up to the accelerated track. We prepared a student to take that exam, and after failing to pass the test, we were all surprised. Then you talked to the school and found out that in the history of the test, no one had ever passed it.
Yes, that was a rather disappointing experience, to say the least. Most high schools are not really interested in letting people move up, only down.
But let's steer back to the hopeful part. You can do a lot to strengthen the academic portion of your application. It's just going to take some planning and extra effort. Basically, summer and online courses are your best friend here.
So talk to me about summer courses. What types are there and how can they be useful?
Sure. So basically, you want to keep in mind the same thing we said earlier about the scale of difficulty. Academic courses are good, but university courses for college credit are better. So when you're out of school for the summer, you can look around wherever you'll be that summer. And you can normally find high schools offering enrichment courses. This would be the good category. But you can probably also find some community colleges or local universities offering courses that you can take as a high school student for university credit. This would be the better category. You also do not need to limit yourself to in-person courses, though some students may prefer these. Because we work with so many international students, we normally register students for online courses for university credit.
Give me some examples of what courses students can take and how these can be useful.
Sure. So there are a number of courses that students can take right away. For example, the University of North Dakota has online courses, and we have had a number of students take microeconomics, in part because there are no meeting times, and so it is especially convenient. The course is completed at the student's pace. We also normally have students take calculus courses there, sometimes up to 3 semesters of university calculus.
Okay, and so when would taking these courses be useful?
In general, we advocate that students think about high school courses as what they have to do. So students need to take, let's say, 10 or 12 classes a year through their high school. But to create the strongest academic resume, students should probably be thinking about what they can do first. So if a student can afford to pay for a university course in economics instead of taking the AP economics exams, that might be better, because then the student could also take a more advanced economics course before they begin university.
That makes sense. And I'm guessing that taking enough courses might help build a spike of sorts.
That's certainly possible. That's a nice callback to our last episode. For example, no one is going to create a math spike by taking calculus in high school. Too many students do that now. So the AP Calc BC exam is nice, but that's really on the equivalent of a second semester math course. If a student really wants to impress math-wise, it would be good to take a few university-level math courses, maybe linear algebra, 3 semesters of calculus, and if they're really enterprising, maybe DiffEQ, differential equations.
Okay, but that sounds like it could be pretty expensive. What about taking courses that are cheaper or maybe even free through something like edX or Coursera?
MOOCs, or massively open online courses, can be a great way to take courses more cheaply, even for free, and to build a spike. For example, you can complete an incredibly wide range of artificial intelligence courses via both edX and Coursera. We would recommend paying for the course certificates if you can afford them, but if you can't, that's also fine. Universities will understand. As for paying for university courses, they definitely will be more expensive. However, this can also be a little bit of an early investment. Most universities will accept university credit from other universities. So let's say you need 120 credits to graduate with a degree from the University of Oklahoma. If you already have taken 5 math courses worth 15 total credits, that is basically 1 semester's worth of tuition that you do not need to pay for.
So for the price conscious, if you look at the universities you are considering early enough, you might find that it's actually cheaper to take university courses online or through community colleges before you show up as a freshman. And that is good advice. That sounds a bit like getting credit from AP and IB exams.
Basically, yes. The difference is that an increasing number of universities are decreasing the amount of credit they give for AP and IB exams. This is happening with university courses too, at some of the most competitive universities, but to a much lesser degree.
Okay, so I understand that it's useful to take university courses and I can take them online, which is convenient, or I can take them in person. And the summer can be an ideal time to take courses because I'm out of school. But there are also a number of online courses I can take anytime at my own pace.
Those are all the main points. The one additional thing I want to point out is that some courses you take can be more useful than others. For example, if you are going to apply to top engineering schools or top business schools, your application will be a bit stronger if you are taking difficult courses in those fields. So if you take a financial modeling class, that would be good for business school. Taking a university composition class will definitely help you if you'd apply to be an engineer. You are, after all, showing that you work hard and are concerned with self-improvement, but it's not going to be as helpful as taking some tough math courses and earning top grades.
And that is an important point to make. Taking a class online or over the summer at Harvard, and yes, high school students can do this, is nice. But getting a B or C is not really going to help that much.
Good point. And that kind of brings us to standardized tests. The reason getting top grades in college courses, even if they're online or through a community college, shows that you got the top grade. Universities can only really guess at how difficult the courses are. The reason universities like standardized tests so much is that they allow universities to compare students to each other.
That's true. Do you want to take a moment and describe what a standardized test is?
Okay. A standardized exam provides a scaled score. In other words, when you take the SAT or ACT or an SAT subject test or an AP exam, you actually never know how well you did on the actual questions of the exam. Rather, you get a scaled score. On the SAT, that's the 200 to 800 point score you get for each section. On the ACT, it's 1 to 36 point. And each of those scores is also matched to a percentile. And the way the testing agency gives you the scores, and this is the reason it takes over a week to get your scores back, is by taking all of the individual performances on the exam and saying, okay, we want no more than 1% of the students to get 800s. So that means students can miss up to one question on this particular day's exam. This is the concept of curving an exam.
So all of these standardized exams are curved, and only a certain percentage of students are going to get fives on the AP English Language and Composition test, for example.
That's right. And wow, that particular AP exam is really hard. That's the reason universities like these exams, because they can mark you as one of the best test takers on that particular day.
Okay, that makes sense. But we have talked about in earlier episodes how the current pandemic has changed testing policies. What's going on?
Most universities up until this year required the SAT or the ACT. And they would consider other exams like AP, IB, SAT subject test. Some of the more competitive universities would even recommend submitting two or three SAT subject test scores. Georgetown long recommended three of these, for example.
Okay, so in years past, if I sent extra exams, they might help my application, but I needed to send the SAT or the ACT. But things are different now.
That's right. Now, most universities are going entirely test optional. A large number of SAT and ACT exams were canceled last fall, and the expectation is that this will happen again. Basically, universities have acknowledged that they cannot reasonably expect all students to be able to take these exams, so they are waiving the requirement. But most of them will still consider the scores.
Okay, so let's say I have some scores. Should I send them?
If you have test scores and they're high, you should send them.
Okay, so what's a high test score?
Great question. And to know, you're going to need to look at the 25th to 75th percentiles of test scores from last year's admitted students.
That sounds daunting.
It's not quite as bad as it seems, though it can be a little difficult to find the information. One of the reasons we built VitaMe was to make information like this easier to find. So if you do download our app, you'll be able to look at the most recent test score ranges that have been published.
So give me an example.
Let's say you're applying to Duke. 25% of students scored lower than 740 on the SAT math section, and at least 25% scored a perfect 800. On the verbal section, 25% scored lower than 710, and 25% scored higher than 770. To put it another way, 75% of students scored higher than 740 on math, and 75% scored higher than 710 on verbal.
So it's possible that I could get in with a lower score, right? I mean, you did say 25% scored lower than 740 and lower than 710.
You could get in with a lower score, but there would have to be something special about you. That score range, the 25th to 75th percentile range I just mentioned, that's used by U.S. News to put together their rankings. And those rankings are pretty important to universities, even though sometimes they pretend not to care. So you have to think, why would this university want to take me if my score is low and I might influence that score range and their university ranking? The answer is, they might be interested in you if you have a spike or a hook. If you're being recruited as an athlete, then it might be fine that your scores are lower. The same is true for legacies.
Okay, so basically, let's say my family is pretty well off and I'm not from a special group, legacy athlete. I should not send my scores if they're below the 25th percentile.
That's right. Then you might continue to try to raise your scores if you can. That can only help, but you should not send those scores.
Okay, and talk to me real quick about the SAT subject tests and AP exams in light of this. Should I still take those exams?
If you are registered for one or more SAT subject tests and you think you're going to do well, sure, take those and send the scores if they're good. And good for top 20 schools means you're scoring, let's say, 750 plus. If you have two scores like that, maybe you could send a third that is a little lower, but still in the 700s. And the AP exams, you should definitely plan to take in May. It can't hurt. And you will get to list those exams as anticipated in the test section of the applications.
That's good advice. And did you want to say a word about the TOEFL or IELTS exams?
Sure. So unfortunately for international students that do not attend an English-speaking high school and for whom English is not their native language, you are still going to need to submit TOEFL or IELTS scores to most universities. Some will make it a bit easier to take an English proficiency exam, and they might accept something like a Duolingo exam. Most of the competitive universities are not going to accept this, however.
Okay, that's good to know. And is there anything else you want to say about standardized exams?
We have spent a good amount of time talking about the main exams, but there are others that can be useful. For example, MIT asks students to report the results, if they have them, from the 10th and 12th grade American Mathematics Competition exams. And all of the applications will allow you to list academic honors somewhere. Exam scores like this can be useful there.
I remember getting something like 10th place on a national French test. My French teacher was not very happy about this, if I remember correctly, because I used to nap in class because French 1 was super easy after taking many years of Spanish, and it was first period.
You bring up two good points. First, yes, you should look for exams that you can take in other subjects. They can definitely help for applications. And second, you should get enough sleep so you don't have to nap in class. C'est vulgaire.
Oui, c'est vulgaire. So to summarize, look for courses outside of your high school to boost your academic credentials. Make sure you are getting good grades. Online MOOC or MOOC courses through sites like edX and Coursera can also be good, and in some cases may even be better. And when possible, take the most difficult classes at your high school. Standardized test scores are not required this year like they have been in years past, but they can still help your applications. So when you can take exams, do. However, you should only send your scores if they are good. And by that, we mean falling in the 25th to 75th percentile for the school you're considering applying to. And with that, we wrap this fifth episode of How to Apply to College Like a Pro. Check the show notes for a summary of the episode and a link to our new mobile app, VitaMe, which will help you keep track of all of your activities, awards, and accomplishments in the very near future. In the meantime, use it to find universities and track your applications. It is available now in Apple's App Store. Next up is the final chapter of this season, Episode 6, Revolution, the whole application cycle from beginning to end. We'll discuss the entire process of selecting universities, sending your applications, and what happens afterwards.